Yo, welcome to Crypto 101, the average consumer's guide to cryptocurrency. This is Matthew Aaron, and I am talking to you from New York City, sitting in my hotel room, ready for Blockchain Week. But what we're going to talk about today has nothing to do with Blockchain Week. We're going to do 101s on three different coins. We have Casino Coin, Decred, and Horizon. Now, Horizon, formerly known as Zencash, was on the show already, but it's been about a year and there's a lot to talk about. So enjoy these 101s on three different coins and use cases in the crypto space. But before we get into that, remember to follow us on Twitter, crypto_101, my personal Twitter, Matthew_101, and join us on Facebook. Join the conversation, talk to like-minded people about cryptocurrency, blockchain, Bitcoin, and all of the cool things that are coming out of this space on our Facebook community, Crypto 101 Community. Don't forget, this is not financial advice, trading advice, investment advice, coin recommendations, personal advice, or anything of the like, but this is educational. I want to say thank you to Randy and Jay for editing this episode. And don't forget, wherever you're listening to this episode, please hit the subscribe button, give us a 5-star rating, and leave us a great comment. It helps us stay visible, and also it attracts more people to the show so they can get great educational information on the crypto space. So without further ado, here is 101s on three different coins. We'll see you after the show. Rob Viglione, CEO and co-founder of Horizon. Welcome to Crypto 101, sir.
Thanks for having me back, Matt.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's good to talk to you. Last time we spoke, you were out grabbing craft beers. It's a little early in the morning or in the afternoon for that. So I think you're probably sober.
No, I'm actually in Milan, Italy right now. So it really is about happy hour time.
Oh, really? Wow. Okay. Yeah. Excellent, man. Well, I hope you get some good vino. And the reason, but getting into the conversation, the reason why I said your name, the Horizon, I didn't know that Zen was still in the name. Last time we spoke, you were a Zencash. You told me you were changing. You might have changed it to Zen, but then you just totally flipped it on me. Took me by surprise, at least, and went Horizon. And now I just learned that Zen is still in the name because I'm too stupid to figure out letters and mix match things up. Can you please tell us about that branding switch? What prompted to that?
Totally. So the big thing is, you know, we have a cryptocurrency, a privacy-oriented cryptocurrency, which was Zencash, and now we just refer to it as Zen. But that was really the focal point of the project and the earliest days. But since then, we've actually expanded significantly on building up more of a platform system. So it just doesn't make sense to call a platform system, you know, a cash, right? So we knew that we had to rebrand at some point, and Horizon just made a lot of sense from a bunch of different angles. So, I mean, yes, we kept Zen in there and our ticker is still Zen. So, you know, we misspelled the Horizon, you know, and it also signifies we're forward looking. We're always looking at that kind of technology frontier. So, you know, it just symbolizes our project nicely.
Right on, man. And so go into what is your project. Give us a 101 on what is Horizon.
Totally. So our project, like I said, started off as a privacy cryptocurrency. But really now the big thing that makes us unique, well, security and robustness is really at the core of what we do. So if you look at us from a security perspective, you know, that's the number one driver for everything that we do. And if you follow our quarterly software updates and our monthly live streams where we talk about everything, you'll see the constant efficiency gains, but really more robustness built into our software. So we were actually 51% attacked last year. And what it got us doing was thinking about how do we solve this problem so we're not just kind of waiting around for the next attack. So we built in some really nice enhancements. So instead of just doing kind of like the longest chain rule with Nakamoto consensus from Bitcoin and most of the projects that just copy it, we actually added a second check in consensus. So actually we've kind of circumvented the typical attack vector that people use to attack these things. But that's just to say that at our core, security is really important. We've layered in different types of cryptography to protect our network. We still use zero knowledge cryptography at the payload level for, you know, encrypted transactions, messaging. But really the kind of secret, or not secret, but the really big differentiator for us on the technology side is what we're doing right now. And actually why I'm in Milan is we have our R&D and engineering center here. And we're going full steam ahead on a fully decentralized sidechain system. So really our architecture is one where we're solving, you know, like what real world problem are we solving here? Well, we're solving a big problem in the industry, which has to do with scaling. So security and scaling are two huge problems in this industry. And on the scaling side, we have this secure main chain that we've been working on for the last couple of years. But now with a sidechain system, we're doing specific functions instead of, you know, running everything through your main chain. Say, like the simple example of, say, CryptoKitties on Ethereum would not run on the Horizon main chain. It would be its own dedicated side chain. So it wouldn't bog down the entire system. Basically, we're going to open up the system. We're building a software developer kit right now where anyone can build their own side chains. And we also launched a commercial enterprise to help businesses build side chains that are useful to solve real world use cases. But really, any developer can launch a side chain. So if you want to launch a real estate side chain, don't go and build your own blockchain. Don't try to think about running your own nodes or worrying about security and consensus. Run a Horizon sidechain. We take care of all that stuff for you. You connect to the largest blockchain node network in the world right now. You know, and we handle all of the security and consensus stuff for you. So we'll have, you know, real estate sidechains, tokenization sidechains, you know, really healthcare sidechains, any kind of functional problem that we have in the real world, you'll see a sidechain, you know, built on the Horizon network. So that's really our bread and butter of where we're going as a project.
You jogged my memory. I remember that you were on the show right after the 51% attack. You hopped on and talked about the whole 51% attack. When it comes to Nakamoto consensus, is Nakamoto consensus flawed, or is it only just specific to Horizon's blockchain?
No, it's not flawed at all. I mean, it works within a certain range or a certain domain. It does its job, but the industry has evolved significantly since then. There's much more of an economic incentive now to attack these networks. So for instance, on Bitcoin, running purely the longest chain rule, it's worked, you know, since 2009 when they had the Genesis block. Since then, I mean, there's been some, you know, big ups and downs, but generally when you have 18 or 20 exohashes of hash rate on your network, it's pretty tough to hijack it. That said, it's still possible, but pretty tough. But when you have all of these other projects that are just, you know, I mean, by definition, significantly smaller on the mining networks that support it, and if they still maintain proof of work, it's nice to add something else. So what a lot of projects do, I think erroneously, is to just assume that what works for Bitcoin is going to work for them. You know, conditions change, the environment changes, markets change. So we changed and we built in a second kind of security check there, which I think is absolutely critical, especially for other mid-size or smaller projects.
You guys seem to be focused more as a platform, more focused more on side chains. Are you still focused also on privacy? And how does that incorporate into the side chains, building the side chains? You used the example of real estate. A real estate guy wants to say, hey, don't build your own blockchain network. We have the most nodes. You make a side chain, run your real estate on the Horizon network. Is that your main focus? And how does privacy come into this anymore, or if it does anymore?
So it's funny that I didn't even talk about privacy yet, because it's just so fundamental in my mind for everything that we do. So we actually don't build anything without privacy already built into its core. So yes, privacy is absolutely critical to what we do. So the long-term vision on just say, what's the purpose of our blockchain even existing? Really, the purpose for me is to endow individuals with complete ownership of their own data. And this comes by actually strong privacy and strong cryptography. So individuals own or have really control over everything that they generate. Now, how does this relate to our side chains? Is actually we have, you know, some very talented cryptographers working on our project right now to actually build a very interesting recursive SNARK model for actually using zero knowledge cryptography to verify the consensus rules on our side chains are actually valid, because we have to have the main chain validate what happens on a side chain without actually getting into the weeds of every side chain, because we do ultimately envision a world of thousands or tens of thousands of side chains. To us, a side chain is a more generalized version of a smart contract. It's more generalized because you could do more with it, because smart contracting will be side chains. We will have side chains to do smart contracting, but we'll be able to tailor it in different ways rather than having, you know, a full Turing complete scripting language for our entire chain. We'll be able to parse out what type of scripting languages or scripting functions do we need. Do we need full Turing complete or whatever? But, you know, a key to this is to actually have the main chain validate that what the side chain is doing is actually secure. And we actually use very strong zero knowledge cryptography to make that happen. So built into the core of every single side chain is, you know, a very sophisticated zero knowledge cryptography library. So yes, the answer is absolutely. Privacy is still absolutely fundamental to what we're doing.
You said this one word that I always like to hear because it gives me an automatic question. You said will. We will have. What do you have now, and what will you have?
Yeah, so what we have right now is a Bitcoin-like but more security-enhanced main chain with a cryptocurrency and a messaging protocol built into it. What we're working on right now is the sidechain SDK. So we're extending the core blockchain protocol to be able to allow an unbounded number of sidechains to be able to plug plug into it in kind of a permissionless way. So that's the differentiator of where we are. So where we are is kind of like an enhanced Bitcoin protocol that, you know, is enhanced for security purposes. You know, we layered more cryptography in there. So we have, you know, secure node-to-node encryption. We've layered in this second check on our consensus to make sure that, you know, the longest chain rule isn't being violated in some nefarious way, like a 51% attack. But the will is the stuff that we're doing right now. And it's not far off in the future. We have a team powering forward right now on it. And that's why I'm actually visiting them here in Milan. But that's the, you know, say 3 to 6 month on the horizon, no pun intended, of where we're going to be, is opening up the protocol to this decentralized sidechain system. And I talk about it so excited. Excitedly, because I think it's truly the, you know, what we've done on the main chain is we have performance enhancements and security enhancements in, say, messaging protocol using zero knowledge. And that's cool, but, you know, they're kind of marginal improvements. The sidechain system is a massive, unique innovation. And this is why I'm so excited about it, because it's our biggest contribution to the industry. So I'm really, really happy about where we're going with it.
Awesome. Looking at your coin market cap right now, not talking about price, but I do want to talk about circulating supply and max supply. Where are the tokens? Are they mineable, or some tokens are parsed out to founders and co-founders and things like that?
No, nothing like that. So actually, egalitarian is a big part of our just general ethos. So we're fully mineable, and actually everything that any one of us own is, you know, founders or you know, insiders, is because we went out to the market and bought it, or we earned it by working for the foundation and getting paid in a transparent way. So no, there's no pre-mine at all. It's purely Bitcoin-like. So we actually didn't change the monetary policy of the system. It's still 21 million max supply, and we still have the exact same emission rate or schedule as Bitcoin does. You know, just we started 10 years later.
Okay, gotcha. You know, going back to privacy, you know, there's a lot of like privacy hype and words, you know, around privacy. What's most private? And I think in our last conversation, we actually discussed what classifies as most private. I revisited that question when I had Beam on the show, and they're working with Mimblewimble. And what is the differences in privacy when it comes to something like Horizon, when it comes to something like Beam or Grin or something like that?
Yeah, so I mean, it really comes down to the type of cryptographic protocol that you're deploying. And we have to think about this also from a user perspective. And the way we run this project is, you know, yes, we do some pretty cool R&D and we're building some cool engineering stuff. But at the end of the day, we're running it like a business, and we're trying to understand what real world problems are we solving, and are we solving them efficiently? So when we think about privacy, what are the problems we're solving with privacy? And then, you know, once you kind of exceed a certain threshold of privacy, is it worth further investment to kind of keep tweaking that? I don't know, actually. So from my perspective, the differences of the projects that are out there on the marketplace and the privacy solutions they have started off with really simple things. In the early days of Bitcoin, it was basically, let's start mixing UTXOs or mixing coins. Yeah, so you can't really, it makes it harder to see who owns what coin, where it came from. And then that was all off-chain mixing. And then, you know, you started seeing these kind of crypto node protocols where they're doing on-chain mixing. And then you started seeing these zero knowledge protocols, from zero coin to, you know, zero cash, and then, you know, ultimately going to Zcash and then and Zen, you're seeing just an application of, you know, LibSnark or these zero knowledge, you know, snark based projects. And that's fine. It's a different abstraction for how we do privacy. But at the end of the day, is there any difference in utility for a user using Monero versus, you know, Zen or Zcash? I don't know. I question it. And then you see Grin and Beam deploying a different kind of way of obscuring, you know, origin of coins and who owns what and where they're going. That's okay. It's cool. I really like the innovation. But from my perspective, we're actually not focusing on enhanced privacy cryptography, because we think that what we have is more than sufficient for 99.999 whatever, you know, percent of the use cases. We're perfectly fine. And if that changes, of course, we'll be advanced leaders there in helping upgrade our platform. But, you know, I'm not interested actually in continuing in more privacy research. What I'm interested in now is continuing research in other things like sidechains that will actually make us scalable and actually deploy real business solutions. Interested in research on how our network, you know, stack operates and make sure that it's efficient. And really, like, the research that I'm interested in is making our technology get out into the hands of the everyday user. So that's my perspective on privacy. I think, I mean, what we have is extremely sophisticated and it's still way cutting edge, but I'm happy that there are other people experimenting in the space. And I think that's good. Ultimately, it'll benefit everyone.
No, I feel you, man. It's kind of like when you see somebody sitting on the highway in a traffic jam with a Lamborghini or something, and you're driving a Nissan Altima. It's like, you really don't need that fast car to be sitting in traffic with me. You don't need to. My mom likes my MacBook Pro, and all she does is play Candy Crush. You do not need a MacBook Pro, Ma.
That's such a good analogy. I completely agree.
You mentioned something in that. You said problems that you're solving. What are the problems you're solving? If you can give me a quick list of the actual problems.
Oh, that's a really good one. Okay, so we have actually one announcement I should probably do is we launched a for-profit spinoff called Horizon Labs. And Horizon Labs is really the B2B arm of our organization. So with Horizon Labs, we actually have about half a dozen design partners, and we're using our technology and designing sidechains that solve some of the real-world problems. And some of these problems include, for instance, we're working with a very large digital invoicing company in one country where they dominate the market in that country. And they have a problem of being able to know what is the most recent and valid, say, corporate document, whether it's a power of attorney, corporate bylaws, or whatnot. It sounds like boring stuff, right? But if you're doing large volumes of business and you have to know and guarantee that a particular document that you're working on is actually the latest and hasn't been superseded by another document that's also legal and, you know, binding to the company, you know, what we offer with a blockchain solution is actually extremely valuable. It's really low cost. It scales significantly. It's secure. You can publish information and validate that what you've published, you know, on schedule, it hasn't been tampered with. And we can use zero knowledge cryptography to actually keep your information private, and you can selectively reveal it when you want to. So that's one thing that we're doing. We have another design partner where we're looking at smart city implementations with blockchain. So kind of an IoT blend with blockchain, and try to help municipal governments actually manage their cities better. We have a banking client that we're actually looking at doing many things for the bank, everything from capital raising to stablecoin issuance to actually service their own marketplace that they have. Let's see, what else do we have in terms of design partners? It's, you know, we have a healthcare use cases that we're looking at. I mean, it's sort of a wide net right now, but that's our philosophy is we know that we have a unique technology that we can deploy in a bunch of different settings, but I think it's much better to actually get it out there in sort of an MVP market or product form, and then see what the market thinks about it in the real world, rather than just kind of, you know, hypothesizing about the way all the value we're going to create in the world. I'm much more of a fan of let's get out there and get a product to market and see how it actually works.
Fair enough. If people like the product that you are trying to put to market after this conversation, how can they find you?
No, go to horizon.global, and truly this is a one-stop shop for everything. If you're an engineer, you can find our GitHub repository there. If you want a wallet, you can find it. You can find the few dozen exchanges that were listed on there. You can find more about the team, find our white papers for all these different, you know, tech projects that we're working on right now. Really, it's if you're interested in joining our community, probably the best spot is to join our Discord channel. So if you're not on Discord yet and you're in this industry, you probably should download Discord and join our Discord group. It's a very active, vibrant community. We have a Telegram channel, all the usual stuff you would expect from a crypto project.
Awesome. Mr. Rob Viglione, CEO and co-founder of Horizon. And thank you for coming to Crypto 101 again, sir.
Thank you so much, Matt. It's always a pleasure.
Marco Paraboom, new systems development lead of Decred. Welcome to Crypto 101.
Thank you for having me.
Sir, really quick, let's get straight into it. Tell us a little bit about the origins of Decred and a little bit of history about yourself.
I'm a bit of an old open source developer and, you know, a security guy. I've been writing operating systems code and all kinds of interesting things. And I'm a guy who typically will reinvent the internet if needed. So I've been working on Decred pretty much from the very beginning. And, you know, before that, I worked on Bitcoin and related projects. And, you know, before that, I worked on cloud stuff, encrypted data storage, you know, servers, internet stuff, just a wide variety of tech.
Cool. And what about the origin of Decred? How did this all start? And what was the motivation to Decred?
So we actually, as a group of people, we built a suite called BTC Suite, full node Bitcoin implementation. That was a really cool piece of software, and we were hoping, you know, that other folks would agree with that. But it turns out that there were some powers that be in the Bitcoin community that didn't love it. And so they were a bit hesitant to accept it. And so that is actually how we landed on the ideas for Decred, because they wanted actually nobody in there in the little sandbox. So what we did with Decred is trying to realize the ideal of cryptocurrency and, you know, and solve some governance issues, right? So how do you resolve disputes? So how do you, as a community, move forward even when there's a ugly decision that needs to be made? So, and that's where we landed with Decred. So it's a community-directed digital currency. and you know, it's meant as a superior store of value that is going to be around for generations to come. So we are secure, adaptable. We are self-funded, which is very important, which means that there is no conflict of interest. So people can still work from their basement or on the other side of the planet. It doesn't matter. They have their own agendas.
Where did the name Decred come from?
I've heard some complaints about the name. What it actually means is decentralized credit. And anybody who has read any science fiction books knows that money is always credits in science fiction books. So decentralized money is really what the idea was. But I'm not sure we got that right.
Actually, Decred sounds better than decentralized or D-money.
D-money. No, I actually personally love the name, but I have some. I've heard some folks complain about it.
Tell us a little bit about this governance. You said that this is a fork of Bitcoin, correct?
It is not a fork of Bitcoin. We wrote this.
Oh, okay,
scratch.
Cool.
So what we did do is we forked the original codes that we had written as the Bitcoin implementation. So all the Bitcoin bits and pieces have pretty much been replaced with Decred bits and pieces.
Excellent. And what is this new governance that you wanted to put on this platform?
So what we really wanted to do is give voice to stakeholders. So that is different than Bitcoin. What that enables the community to do is to actually vote on big changes. So whereas Bitcoin's protocol is essentially set in stone and it was actually designed not to ever be changed, we figured that it would be helpful to have the ability to make modifications over time. So as most folks know, software breaks over time. What seemed a good idea back then turns out not to be a great idea and needs to be revised. So it allows us to make tough decisions to make changes to consensus and protocol. And that is important if you want to be around for a long time. So that pillar of governance gives us longevity. So we are going to be able to adapt, you know, and deal with the unknown unknowns, if you will.
Okay, so let's use a example I think everybody probably would know. And let's talk about Bitcoin's block size. The debate of should the block size be increased. Can you walk us through how that would be decided on Bitcoin and how that would be decided on, say, Decred?
So in Decred, actually, so what I did not say in the prior segment, which I probably should have said, is that there's another pillar to Decred governance, and that is the ability to make decisions that are not protocol and consensus, and also to disburse funds, so basically pay people for work. So I left that out, but that's an important piece to answer this question. So a big block debate would probably start as a debate. A bunch of people yelling at one another on the internet, it's a good idea, it's a terrible idea, you know, and then some profanity is probably used, and that actually has no value. So what we would do in Decred is somebody would put up a proposal saying, we would like to propose to raise the Decred block limit to, let's say, 10 megabytes. Then a debate would ensue. And this debate, and by the way, this whole proposal in the debate thing would happen on a platform called Politeia. That is a piece of software that we wrote that is meant literally to keep track of all these things. So it cannot be censored.
Politeia would be spelled P-O-L-I-T-E-I-A, correct?
Correct. So that is our platform to have these debates and ultimately come to a decision. So what we this would be more of a signaling thing, right? So if the community is categorically against doing any of this, then it probably will not be worth writing the code for it, right? So if the community is kind of split on it, then that means, you know what, there's a chance that this could be a good idea. So now then the proposal has got to move to, let's call it a next phase. And then that basically means that somebody needs to be paid to do the work, right? So somebody signs up to do the work gets done, and then actually that code will be made part of the actual code base. So note that no decision has been made yet, but the code has been written. And this is important because once you start voting on chain to see if we are going to pass the big block vote, it needs to be active already. So in other words, there's going to be no backseas. So once people vote for it, and it passes, then that would be, you know, the new law of the land. Does that make sense?
No, it totally makes sense. I have a question about changing of code, meaning, you know, humans are flawed, right? And it takes a long time for code or anything to become perfect. And, you know, you won't see any back doors, anything that's broken, anything that's, you know, somebody can find a vulnerability. With changing the code so often, do you find that you make for a weaker system or stronger?
So I would argue stronger, but let's get one thing out of the way here, though, is that consensus votes and protocol votes are very few and far between. So they don't happen that often. And I think we totally had, at this point, about 4 or 5 of them total in Decred's, 3-year existence. So they are pretty rare, and for the reasons you just brought up. So A, consensus shouldn't be changing all that often, right? Because that basically means you did something wrong if it has to change a lot. But sometimes, if you want to add additional features, this is where it becomes a valuable tool. So for example, another thing that we did that you might have heard of is called atomic swaps, which basically means you could exchange cryptocurrency between two different coins. So you could exchange, let's say, Litecoin for Decred. So in order to support and to make that functionality work, we had to make a consensus change. And that is where the tool is very, very handy to basically make these tough decisions, right? So, and you're making a minimal change to consensus to allow an extra thing to be done. And with that, we got the ability to do atomic swaps.
Decred is a currency.
Yes.
It's meant to be spent between P2P or B2B. What is your vision for Decred?
Oh, that is a long debate. No, so...
Well, I don't know if it's a debate. It's just your vision.
So. Okay, my vision. So I want to create a superior cryptocurrency that holds value and then I exchange with multiple people. And I also want to be able to have say over it, how it is done and how things work. So in other words, I want the community to have a say in the direction of this cryptocurrency. So the stakeholders that have an obviously hold value, they have a selfish interest in making sure that the network stays healthy. So, and I hope that the wisdom of the crowd, of all these stakeholders, will push this cryptocurrency into the future and do things that we haven't thought about yet. So another thing is the ability to be free of certain things. So Decred, it's a project, right? So it's not a government and it's not a corporation. Yet there's all these people that have self-organized and are doing work and are perpetuating this technology and are making it better. That is one of the most exciting things that I've ever worked on. That in itself for me is a goal, is to have this self-funded technology that provides a monetary system for anyone in the world.
So for it to be successful, people have to use it. What is Decred's transaction volume right now?
Oh, I honestly don't have the number of that on top of my head. I write code. I don't keep track of, you know, stats very often.
No worries. No worries.
So what I can say is that the coin market cap values, I think, somewhere between $1.5 and $5 million a day is the norm.
Right, but coin market cap is looking at trade volume.
Yeah, I don't correct? Have the number for you.
That's no worries. And the reason why I ask that is, you know, we always look at these coins or these currencies as being successful via their trade volume, who's swapping them back and forth. But I really want to know who's using these, especially when it comes to currencies.
I do have a bit of an answer for that, if you
okay.
will.
Absolutely.
Decred has a contracting system. So part of the self-funding means that as a software developer or as a marketeer, you can show up, do work, and get paid in Decred. So in other words, Decred has created this its own little economy where the people working on Decred are paid in Decred, and therefore, you know, by adding value in their time to the network, they also have a selfish interest in bringing other people into Decred. It really is its own little economy.
I understand that. So is the end goal of being a Decred economy, Decredonomics, if you will, or is the end goal to be the currency, the digital currency that you can buy bread and beer and soda at the store
well,
with?
Well, so ultimately that would be the case, but I think we need to be realistic of where we are in time at this point. So I think that there is a huge potential that can be the case, but it's not going to be in the next couple of years. So, but yes, that would be fantastic if we can get it that easily to use.
So we know the governance. We know why it's made. We know what your plans are or what your wishes are for Decred. How do you compete? What is the point of differentiation between Decred and all these other currencies that are out there, digital currencies like Coin Monero, what have you, anything, Bitcoin Cash even? What is the difference and how do you think that you're going to be the coin or the cash to be buying the bread and milk and cereal at the grocery store opposed to these hundreds of other
So
ones.
Honestly, I think that the answer to that is our governance model. So with the governance model, we buy the capability or we have the capability to make tough decisions and to also modify the currency into something that is more useful 10, 20, 30 years from now. So that adaptability is really what sets us apart from, say, a Bitcoin. So Bitcoin is what it is. And another thing that I think is important to note is that I personally think that forking is unhealthy for the community. So it has happened a couple of times now with Bitcoin. Some of the forks are more unfortunate than others. But the one thing that I do seem to have in common is that you create these warring factions between one Bitcoin and the other Bitcoin. And I don't think that's healthy, right? And I even see some of these offshoots pretending to be the actual Bitcoin and then misinforming people. And that does not help the community at all. That does not help Bitcoin. It is in my opinion, that's actually detrimental to the entire space.
Gotcha. So basically, you want all the coins to live in harmony, and it's possible because of atomic swaps.
Well, yeah. So, well, I also am of the opinion that not all of these coins are going to be around very long term. A lot of these things are just going to simply disappear, and they're not going to be successful. And one of the reasons why I think that Decred will be successful is, again, our ability to adapt to future needs. So I do want to say another thing here, though. Decred is, the developers have been around, worked on Bitcoin code for a very long time. So we are not, you know, a flash in the pan or a marketing created organization. So we are a bunch of guys that and girls that believe, you know, in a certain thing, and we want to make the best of that. So we are not here to solve a marketing problem.
No, I totally understand that. Okay, so my last question was going to be, if people want to be involved in Decred, not even if you want to talk about the community, the development, the governance, or just use Decred in their day-to-day life and start transacting with it, can you give us some direction of how to do
that?
Well,
so first off, I would direct people to go to decred.org. There is a mountain of information there on how to use it. So the more technical how to use this cryptocurrency. We have folks that spend entire days just writing documentation and actually answering users' questions. So that is a very important resource. So the other thing that is happening is that Decred is, we are more of a develop first and then, you know, show pretty stuff later. So what we have been doing the last couple of years is kind of heads down and really trying to get the technology to a point where it becomes more available to more people. So when we are getting to a point now where we can start bringing on somewhat less technical folks, and we are iterating on that. So our wallet, for example, is extremely simple to use. And I would argue that most folks would figure that out pretty quickly if they have ever used online banking. So it's getting to a point where we can start bringing on more people. So and as we progress through these development phases where things are becoming increasingly simple to use, we want to cast a wider net, is get more and more people involved, and even, you know, in the more day-to-day stuff, so the paying in bread. So we are going to make pushes in that direction.
How easy is it to use Decred? You said it's like online banking. Can my mom, can grandma go to your website, download a wallet, and just, you know, is it intuitive?
So I would argue yes, but I am a guy who deals with it every day, right? So other folks might have other ideas. So here's what I can tell you that I know for a fact. If I compare the Crediton, which is the Decred wallet, to most other wallets, it is without a doubt much simpler to use. So the only people that make wallets that are as easy to use, for example, I'm drawing a blank now. What's their name? They're really great, actually. Exodus. Exodus makes an outstanding wallet as well that is relatively simple to use. So I think that the biggest problem in crypto is the on and off ramp, right? So buying Decred or acquiring Decred is the most complicated part. Once you have it, it's extremely simple to use. So I think that as a community and as a, you know, not just Decred, but the entire cryptocurrency community, we need to find better ways to get people into the cryptocurrency space. So I don't want to plug too many things, but one of the most promising technologies that I've seen from a getting grandma to use it perspective is a product called Cointext. And you can literally send Decred to another person using a text message. No wallets set up, none of that. And it's pretty much instantaneous. So I can go to a farmer's market, you know, send somebody a text message, and now those people have value in Decred.
Excellent. That's awesome. I'm going to look more into it. Marco Paraboom of Decred, thank you very much for coming on Crypto 101 and giving us a 101 on the project.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I hope it was informative.
John Caldwell of Casino Coin, Director of Advocacy, welcome to Crypto 101, sir.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to just get right into this. I love just kicking it off, going straight for the meat. Tell us a little bit about yourself, sir.
I have a goofy background. So I grew up in LA and in and around music. And so that led me to the music business, where I was at Atlantic Records for a few years. Got super lucky super early and wound up working with a band called Stone Temple Pilots. I was one of their managers for about 4 years. Left, Atlantic offered me my own label, left and partnered for that label with Hootie the Blowfish. And so did a whole 15-year music thing. And then the music business collapsed. Napster, perhaps you've heard of it. So I found myself with a ton of time and a bit of cash. And so I started playing a lot of poker. But I couldn't find information about poker anywhere. And so that led to me starting PokerNews.com with a guy in Lithuania. So I actually moved from Los Angeles to Lithuania to build this website. And so we started this website and built it up from, you know, me and two guys in a closet effectively to about 70 people when I left in 2009. So sold my stake in that and then moved on to PokerStars.com, where I spent about 4.5 years on their executive team running all kinds of various areas. That company sold. And at that point, I took 6 months off, which was six of the better months of my life, and then started getting into the crypto thing. I had a friend from PokerStars who was super, super into it. And so we just started going on it and we built a couple things early and just had a little success with those, and that kept going. And then one day we just sold one of our little mini projects and we're kind of like, well, what now? And that led us to the path ultimately that led us to Casino Coin, which is where we are now.
Awesome, man. A cool story. Stone Temple Pilots is one of my childhood bands growing up. I would say, yeah, I'm a product of the 90s, a teenager of the 90s. So it was definitely on my playlist. And it's interesting. About 2 years ago, I had another manager from STP on the show.
Steve Stewart.
Yes.
Yep. So Steve Stewart. So I worked for Steve Stewart Management. And so Steve was the manager and I was what's called the RA, responsible agent. So most big bands have two managers, one guy that, let's just say, makes the bulk of the money and does.
So which one were you, the bulk of the money or the not bulk of the money?
No, man. I was 24 when I started, 25 when I started. So Steve was about, what is Steve? Maybe 10 years older than me, 6 or 7 years older than me, something like that. But Steve has a blockchain thing too. I forget what it is, but it's around royalties and tracking and whatever. And he's a good dude. So, but I was the junior guy. I was a young guy and was in way over my head. If you know the band, you know there's a lot of drugs and a lot of challenges, shall we say, in that band. But Steve and I both survived, luckily, and we lived to tell about it.
Is Steve's project going on? I remember he was doing the Vest project, but I thought it closed. Is he doing something else?
I don't know. Steve and I worked together 24 years ago.
All right. And then you guys just did your own thing. And
I had lunch with him like when he started Vest. When he started Vest and I was already in the space and whatever. So we just had a little kind of reunion and pick your brain kind of thing. But he's a super smart guy and somebody that I have a lot of respect for.
Right on. So Casino Coin, what does it do?
So Casino Coin is a payment mechanic for the regulated gaming business. So what that means is we allow companies, users to do things that fiat currency doesn't necessarily allow or doesn't allow at the speed or practicality that we do, all the while being extremely regulator friendly and actually does a number of things that normal fiat currency can't do from a regulated perspective. And that's kind of how it started. You know, we actually went first to regulators. I think my first meeting with the Malta Gaming Authority was in maybe Feb of 17, something like that. And we just sat down with them and said, hey, what do you want? You know, this is coming one way or another. And luckily, there's a guy there called Carl Brinkhat who was knowledgeable. And I was really surprised and really pleasantly surprised that there was a regulator who was hip to blockchain and was knowledgeable. So they've been a good sounding board and really, really proactive with respect to what they're trying to accomplish there in Malta. But that's how it started. We went to regulators first, operators second, and then we were both Duncan and myself. Duncan is the head of the Casino Coin Foundation, are gamblers, him more than me, but I enjoy a good gamble now and again. So we started as customers and we knew what was broken about the process. And so we wanted to make something, make it better.
Okay, I'm still confused what it does. Does it facilitate transactions between bettors and casinos?
Correct. So you go in. So let's say you're a bettor, right?
Okay.
So you're a gambler. And so you want to make a deposit at site X, let's say. So what you have to do is you have to go into site X and you have to give them all your documents, go through the KYC process. Now, you don't often have to do this until you cash out. Sometimes these days you have to do it up front. But let's say you're actually a sports bettor, okay? So you see the line on the Cowboys game is 7.
What does a line 7 mean?
Sorry. So you see the betting spread on the Cowboys game is Cowboys minus 7.
Okay.
So that's, you decide the Cowboys are the greatest team in the world. You want the Cowboys, right?
Right on.
So you sign up for X, but then actually you look a day later, the game's Sunday, this is Thursday, let's say, you look a day later and it's 6.5 over it at the competitor.
Okay.
So you think, well, obviously 7 is not very common end spread for a football game. So 6.5 gives you a big edge. So you decide, wow, I want that. So now you have to go over to Y and you have to do the stuff you just did at X.
Okay.
Right? So you have to do your KYC. You have to go through the whole process. With us, you have to do KYC once.
Okay.
Right. So you do once, and we transmit. We do not keep the KYC, but it's proxy served in the background. So it just connects with a KYC partner, Jumio, who, you know, many of the gaming business use. It's very common. They're certainly very aware of Jumio and their products. So there's a higher comfort level there. And so now you're in, you're faster, you're up, you're going, and it's a much less friction-filled process, if that makes sense. Additionally, from the customer perspective, one of the real frustrations, if you're not a gambler, you won't know this, but one of the real frustrations for gamblers is cashing out. Mm-hmm. So you not only have a sort of friction experience sometimes at the vendor point, but you also have a friction experience with the bank, because the banks don't love gaming. As you might know, banks here, that's how they killed online poker here mm-hmm. in America. So I worked for PokerStars, obviously, biggest online poker company in the world. And in 2011, you know, people think that online poker is illegal here, right? But it's actually not. Bank transactions involving online poker that are illegal, and that's how they got around it. So there's a lot of friction points. And this is really maybe jumping ahead, but I know one of your things you like to talk about is, why do you need to do this? Mm-hmm. This is the main reason I need to do this. I watch from the inside the online poker thing happen in America. I watch the boom. I watched the subsequent ban. And I watched how it affected people all the way through the process. And it sucked. And it taught me a lot of lessons about who's really in control and how fine the lines are, you know, what separates law from sort of guideline, if you will, and how those are enforced. And it left a bad taste in my mouth.
Can you explain that? Law from guideline?
Sure. So if you ask 100 people, 1,000 people, whatever, is online poker illegal in America? Most of them would say yes. Hmm. Now, something has happened in the last few years, which is online poker is actually now legal in Nevada, New Jersey, Delaware, and there's states that are popping up that are legalizing. So there's not fully, if someone listening in those states right now will be like, hey, hang on. But
right.
If you're in California, if you're in any number of states, it's not going to work. But the actual reality is they didn't want it because they couldn't figure out how to tax it, how to make money off of it, essentially, effectively. That's my argument anyway. You know, it wound up being the thing where they just sort of decided they were going to do it this way, due process be damned. It was attached to a bill having to do with port security in the middle of the night with no discussion. And suddenly this industry that I was in was gone overnight.
So I got a question about the taxes. You said that they couldn't figure out how to tax this. With the KYC AML that you are doing, that's going to be reported to the IRS, of course.
Yeah, well, if they
ask for it.
Well, in markets that it's appropriate. So in the UK, there's no tax on gambling winnings. So it's not relevant.
Okay.
But if and when the day comes where this is used in the US, it's very far away from having anything like this being used in a online environment because so few of the states are regulated. So we're talking about 2% of the population.
But with casino coin, it is very easy to circumvent that, correct? I mean, if you're playing online poker, you're sitting here in California, you're gambling in whatever country, you can just, you know, go to ETH, transfer that to your bank through Coinbase. There's a way.
So there is a way, but that's not how we operate. So we're regulated markets only.
Okay.
Right? So we're only dealing in Europe right now.
Gotcha.
And that's where the bulk of the activity is. That's where the bulk of the business is. So I got off on a little bit of a tangent, which I am wont to do at times, but that's what led me to do this, right? And that's what led to the building of this solution. But let's get back to Casino Coin. So from a customer's perspective, you have a very friction-filled process oftentimes when you cash out. With us, cash outs are instant approving, assuming the partner is releasing the funds. So assuming the casino is releasing the funds, which they have no reason not to do, there's no bank standing in the way, you'd get your money back straight away. If you are in Holland and you play a slot product online and you win 1,000 euros, it can be a process to withdraw. And in fact, it's become kind of an art with some operators that what they'll do is intentionally kind of delay the process. Well, if the money's sitting in your account and you've had a few drinks, what are you going to do? Gamble with it. Gamble it again.
Oh, well, yeah, okay. See, that's a gambler's mindset. I was like, yeah, I guess I'll wait for it.
Yeah, right. Exactly. No. So the gambler's mindset, especially when the drinks are involved, is, hey, you know, I'll tell you what, I'm going to turn that 1K into 2K, right?
Right.
So, you know, we create solutions in that way for the player. Mm-hmm. Now, for the operator, that's where our probably biggest benefits lie, right? So the operator, one of their main cost centers at the moment, and definitely their biggest pain in the ass at the moment, is the customer-facing stuff they have to deal with. So that's stuff like your KYC, that stuff, like all of the anti-money laundering regulation, which is very necessary, by the way, and very important, but also very burdensome for them as an organization. Responsible gambling. Now, our responsible gambling features aren't fully built into the platform yet, but we're working on them, and those are in development. But these are incredible cost centers for these companies and becoming just a real impact on their bottom line, coupled with the fact that the regulators are a little bit sometimes inconsistent. I don't know if inconsistent is the right word, but basically their attitude is like, well, here's what we think the rules are, but it's kind of a loose sort of thing. But if you break them, we'll let you know with a big fine. So it's really created a lot of problems for these businesses in an industry where the margins are quickly disappearing because mm-hmm. competition is so high and adoption is significant and some would argue at saturation point. So their margins are disappearing and it creates a lot of problems.
Can we go into the blockchain a little bit of itself? It's a Ripple fork, and what are we actually doing with this? It's a transfer of value throughout the blockchain. And what is the blockchain used
sure.
for?
Absolutely. So let's be real clear about something. It's an XRP fork. Speaking of fork, I get pitchforked if I say Ripple. So it is an XRP fork.
XRP fork. Gotcha. Yep.
So the reason that it's necessary for us to have our blockchain is we need the control. We can't. The thing about something like Ethereum, right? And the Ethereum team are very smart and working on some very, very cool stuff. But ultimately, if you're on Ethereum, you're at the mercy of the platform. Same with XRP. If we stay on XRP, we're at the mercy of the XRP network. And so if we need changes made, if a regulator decides they need changes made, if we've discovered something that'll work for us as a business, maybe better than XRP, we'd be at their mercy to make those changes. If they make changes that don't work for us, same thing, we have to take them. So we chose to fork XRP, make it our own blockchain, and that's also a lot more regulator friendly, right? So from a regulatory perspective, we can trace the path of every single coin from coin one. Well, yes, can you do that on other blockchains? Of course, but we have control over it. And we've built a tool we call the Oculus Visual Explorer that makes it super, super easy for regulators who aren't necessarily techies, right? Because they tend not to be, to just have a look. At the moment, if you're familiar with the Block Explorer, which I'm sure you are, it's two giant QR codes, these long strings of characters, and then some green and some red and blah, 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 blah. We've made it that it just says, you know, straight up, Joe, who lives in London, sent coins to Bob, who lives in Paris.
Nice.
Right. Simple. And so the regulator can go in and see. And so that has a bunch of impacts, right? Number one, it has an impact with respect to a money laundering situation, but also from a criminality perspective, right? So your buddy Bob might be okay and you might be okay, but actually Bob has kind of a dodgy cousin named Frank. And sometimes Frank gives money to Bob to bet and all that stuff goes away with us. I mean, it doesn't go away. The activity may still be there, but we can detect it. And it's something that regulators have responded extremely positively to. And it's something where we think is definitely the future. But the blockchain is essential for it. It's in databases. You would just have a harder time. First of all, you're talking about databases being closed walls, right? Individual operators and individual entities will have their own databases, but when stuff moves around, you can look at it and you can track it, certainly, but it's not as effective as a single base and single pool, if you will.
The value of your coin, what is the value of your coin based off of? Can people speculate on the coin, or is it just on what is liquid in the markets within the gambling industry?
I'm sorry, I'm not clear on the question. So,
okay, on for example, on CoinMarketCap, the market cap is 25 million.
Yep.
That market cap, for example, if I went onto an exchange, I could buy casino coin, or is the casino coin only traded within the regulated gambling industry?
I see. No. So you certainly can buy them on exchanges. We don't really focus on the exchange part of it. It got so goofy last year. I had some crazy people calling me up and saying, hey, I can get you on X exchange for, you know, millions of dollars. And it's like, that's not us, man. That's just not us. So we don't really focus on that part of it. Our theory has always been, let's build this thing. Let's make it right. Let's get it used. By the way, there's a novel concept. And then the value will come. And so, yes, is it tradable? Is it buyable? Absolutely. But our approach has always been one of, you know, let's get the product out in the market and then let's start talking about it.
Excellent. What is the market like right now in Europe? How much people are actually using this in their systems?
Well, it's not legal in any jurisdiction yet, but Malta is just put together the first sort of structured thing, and the first licenses are about to be issued really almost any day now. So it's coming. but we had to go the fully regulated route because that's the way we do it. You know, certainly there, you'll see tons of Bitcoin casinos out there and ETH casinos out there, and those are active and they're used, but they don't give regulators the same comfort necessarily that our solution does.
Awesome, man. If people want to find out more about Casino Coin, where can they find you or find more information about Casino Coin?
Yeah, so www.casinocoin.org. That is our nonprofit foundation, Casino Coin Foundation. And we have a Discord. That's our primary social channel. Search, I think it's chat.casinocoin or casinocoin.chat. And you should be able to find us.
John Caldwell, thank you for coming on Crypto 101 and telling us about Casino Coin, sir.
Appreciate it, man.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Crypto 101. I hope that it was educational and we learned a little bit about these three projects. Horizon, Decred, Casino Coin, thank you very much for coming on the show. Don't forget, wherever you're listening to this episode, hit the like button, hit the subscribe button, leave us a 5-star rating and a great comment. It helps us stay visible and helps us keep pushing forward to make great episodes of Crypto 101. And we'll see you in the future episodes of Crypto 101 with more 101s on different projects in the space, as well as great conversations with some amazing people. We'll see you in future episodes of Crypto 101.